All right, here we are. Now I'm recording. Student Dr. Richard Arreo, my great friend, my co-author of Imperfect Balance, as you can see in this back corner here. Yeah, dude, welcome back to the show for, geez, third time we were talking about. Yeah, listeners, me and Richard sat next to each other for countless hours, preclinical years. We wrote a book together. Try to help med students who think they can't handle medical school because maybe they're too nuts in the head or something. And now we are both awaiting in this weird purgatory space to see if we match into psychiatry residency. So we're fourth year med students in just kind of the greatest, worst place in the world.
Yeah, it's an odd space to be in right now. We're in this interim period, having finished all of our sub-I's. And just kind of waiting to graduate, fingers crossed, and finding out in about 2 weeks whether or not we matched to a residency. So yeah, it's a nail chewing time to be a med student.
Yeah, and I found, you know, this what we're describing as match week is when we find out if we have a residency and where that residency is. You know, the last few months we've been interviewing, sending these personal statements, sending all these like emails about, I'm interested in your program, I love you, blah, blah, blah. And now we've gotten so far into the process that all that's kind of over. Like, to my knowledge, I don't think we're supposed to even continue to talk to residencies right now. I don't really know exactly the rules.
I've got a couple emails in the last week or two from program directors kind of they're feeling us out or feeling me out to see where I stand and letting me know that they're still interested in me. But it's probably kind of a generic email they're sending to everyone they interviewed. Get that impression too.
Yeah, it's really hard to kind of read. And I find like I have to constantly remind myself to not overanalyze my past performance. Cause now it's like there's nothing much for us to do. So I'm just like thinking about the past. And that's something that I've been struggling with like quite a bit. Like, how is that going to impact my future? And like, where am I going to match? And like, should I have said this in this one particular interview? And it's just being incredibly overcritical of the past 6 months. What has your experience been like?
I'm trying to remember a lot of the questions that I've gotten. A lot of the interviews that I've had feel kind of surreal, almost like videos that I, you know, have watched back in the day of myself having done something. And they've all blended together, and trying to remember, you know, which program director, you know, correlates with which program, and which interview did I actually say that ridiculous, you know, comment in. And it's all kind of blending together now, except for, you know, one or two programs that I'm particularly interested in. So yeah, it's this very weird, surreal, black and white memory.
It's so strange. So how do you, though, when you have those thoughts, how do you kind of break out of that cycle?
I'm not dwelling too much on whether I messed something up. I'm not dwelling on that too much. At this point, I feel like I'm just trying to keep moving forward, trying to let the programs that I'm particularly interested in, let them know that I remain particularly interested in them, without inundating them so much. And at the same time, trying to come across as being sincere and legitimate and make emails and, the little love letter emails I'm sending out, you know, not come across as boilerplates, because they're really not. I mean, I'm really, really not sending boilerplate emails to places at all at this point. I'm just responding to emails that I get from program directors. And then the one particular program that I'm particularly interested in, I'm really trying to let them know that I remain very interested in your program. So yeah, I'm not dwelling too much on the past at this point. I'm chewing my nails. Went a bit. I'm pulling my hair out a little bit. Try not to hold my breath for more than 2 or 3 minutes at a time, and just kind of, you know, continuing along the progression until March 15th, which is the Monday of match day, and then Friday, March 19th, is going to be our finding out if where we match to.
Yeah. It's I kind of have this weird like kind of countdown in my head that I'm always sort of aware how much more time needs to elapse until match day happens. I hate when I do that. You know, I feel like I've done that in the past with other events in my life. Maybe when I was like depressed living in Scotland, because I thought like the day I went home from Scotland, my depression would subside, which it didn't. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, I don't, I find it's hard right now to really live in the moment because so much is riding on the future and our life is going to look so radically different. 4 months from now, right? We'll be starting on July 1 or so as interns, actual doctors, which I'm terrified about. I don't know how you feel.
Terrified of that. I can't believe I'm going to have all this ability to prescribe, and it's going to be my responsibility to actually come up with diagnoses. They're legitimate. I can't be relying on someone else to, you know, guide me through it so much. I'm really nervous about that. I feel like I'm nowhere near that point, you know, in doctoring that, you know, that responsibility should be falling on my shoulders. They say that's pretty much one of the biggest transitions in medical career is, you know, going from med student to actual doctor. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm nervous about that. I've broached that subject with a lot of program directors in the interviews just because all the interns, the first year residents I see, they seem so much more advanced than me. They seem doctors. And I still feel very much like a medical student. And to think that I'm going to be at that stage in just a few months, it's nerve-wracking because I have to be at that stage. And every program director I've met and every person I've talked to about that has kind of confirmed to me that everyone's nervous like that. Everyone feels that, all medical students. And you are going to be at that stage in just a year. You are going to be there and you don't need to worry about it. It's just a matter of, you know, of transitioning and, you know, becoming that, and it's going to be a rebirth. So regardless.
No, definitely. And, you know, the last 6 months for us have been this weird, like our performance as a medical student has radically changed. Whereas the first 3 years or so were very science heavy the first 2 years. And then you get in clinics and it's very focused on you're in pediatrics this month, you're in psych this month, you're in surgery this month. So learning those aspects of medicine. Then I feel like now in these auditions and interviews, it's so much more like nebulous tasks, interpersonal skills, communication skills, which is something I think both of us do better at than the science stuff. But I'm also feeling like, oh crap, I forgot so much stuff that I used to know.
Yeah.
And I have all these self anxieties that when I start medical school or when I start residency, that is, I'm like, oh my God, am I actually going to be ready? Like, is this, I'm extremely intimidated. And the way I kind of get over that hurdle is I just remind myself that every medical student has had to go through this process to go to residency. It's, you know, like me and you are kind of weirdos, but we can't be that much of a weirdos. Like we have to still, like, everyone feels this way. And I'm sure I think it's just like a natural process. And I guess we'll have another episode in a few months here updating our listeners on how that went. But yeah, right now when I look at starting residency as a doctor, I am terrified.
Yeah, I am too. I feel like I'm going to be okay in the psych department. I feel more confident in that because I've been focusing for the last 6 months, you know, on psych, you know, elective rotations and, you know, sub-I's. Mm-hmm. Of course, you and I are both going into psych. But I'm quite nervous about the 6 months in intern year where we got to commit to internal medicine, you know, family medicine, neurology, especially the internal medicine part. I'm really nervous about that. I feel like all of that, all those theoretical questions I spent years and, you know, months and then weeks and then hardcore days of nonstop study just to, you know, pass the boards that focus you know, primarily on all that. That's all gone now. I haven't zeroed in on that in months. I'm terrified of when I gotta, you know, apply all that to actual patient care and, you know, all that weight's gonna be on my shoulders. I'm really nervous about internal medicine in particular.
One thing I think we'll do well, my wife, for instance, is a phlebotomist. And I always joke, she's actually gotten more experience in the hospital than I have because when COVID hit, she still went to work. I had to sit my ass at home on, you know, getting kicked out of the rotations from these hospitals.
Yeah.
And, you know, so she is very works. She's like the low level totem pole as a phlebotomist in the medical system, but very closely with the nurses. And of course, getting orders from doctors to take out blood from all these patients. And she says the doctors that everyone can't stand, it really has nothing to do with actually their medical knowledge. It's how much they really think they know and their level of essential, not confidence, but cockiness. And so I feel like me and you coming into this with really so much almost self-doubt and self-anxiety, I feel like the nurses, the phlebotomists, all the supporting staff, our senior residents are really going to help us and be willing to help us that much more versus if we're on the other side, like, oh, I know everything. I'm so cocky. I don't need your help. She says those doctors, everyone, no one likes working with, and they have conflict all day, every day kind of thing.
I've worked with those doctors, I'm sure you have too, just as preceptors and just as colleagues, as we've gone through various rotations. And it sucks to work with those types of individuals, and not just in medicine, in any kind of capacity. You come across any kind of, cocky individual, who thinks that they know better than anyone else, and it's a drag to be around them. Yeah, I can understand that. And I don't think, hope to God I never embody that. I'm going to strive really hard not to.
No, certainly. And it's been very strange. How have you handled in the last, especially the last year, this fourth year? I've had this weird conundrum where, psychiatry traditionally is not very competitive. 20 years ago, it seemed like, you could kind of think of it as a second choice, or there would be a lot of international students who would go into psych because those seats were available. It just wasn't something that attracted a lot of students. Who knows exactly why? That's not my view, though, of where psych is in 2021. I feel that who knows what the exact numbers are going to be this year, but it's been trending more competitive than it used to be. And these seats aren't, or these residency programs aren't huge either. And I think the life of a psychiatrist is pretty sweet. And I think a lot more people are understanding that. But I've had a lot of my preceptors who I've worked with be like, "Oh, you're definitely gonna match into psych. It's so easy to match into psych." And I'm like, you're kind of making me feel like a piece of crap here. Like, I don't have a ton of interviews. I can't say for certainty I'm gonna match into psych. I hope I do. And it's been like, I feel like I almost want to get argumentative about it with that preceptor, but I'm just like, I swallow my tongue and it's very frustrating. Have you dealt with anything like that?
No, I haven't come upon that. I've come upon the opposite. All the preceptors and residents who've, talked to me about psych, which is a lot, they've all been real straightforward and told me, the world is changing, and the interest in psych is becoming significant, and it's becoming very competitive. I mean, some doctors have compared it to the extremely competitive residencies. I don't think that's the case. I don't compare it to dermatology or orthopedic surgery in the regard that, one out of
I
100
agree with you.
applicants or so might be applying for it. But I've heard some doctors, comparing it in that regard, which is to say that, yeah, it's becoming a lot more competitive. It's becoming a lot more sought after. And I guess the reason is because it does afford a good lifestyle. And, there's a high demand. There's a very high demand. There's a big need these days for psychiatrists the world over. And people are realizing that. And so, yeah, people are getting drawn into it. I think the pay is getting more competitive, relative to other specialties. So you look at the pay, relative to the lifestyle. And although the pay might be relative to, say, family medicine or internal medicine, you might be working 2/3 of the hours of the family med doc or the internist, and therefore the pay actually is significantly better. And so there's a lot of factors that are making it much more competitive, which is nerve-wracking. It's nerve-wracking for me because I've never seen myself as being a highly competitive applicant. I think I'm a good applicant, but the bright shining star, I've never seen myself as that. So I've got to try to, make myself stand out somehow as I'm talking to program directors and residents and, trying to get them to remember me somehow. So yeah, it's quite nerve-wracking just the fact that this specialty that I've been interested in as long as I've been in medical school and long before that too, might just potentially be out of my reach. I don't think it
Perhaps.
is, but it might potentially be. It's nerve-wracking.
We're talking right now before match week happens. And knock on wood, hopefully it all goes well for us. But I've also met a fair amount of psych residents who've been able to get into psych residency as a second year. So I know that if it doesn't go well for us, we hypothetically could take a transitional year, which for the listeners, that's like you do 1 year at some random hospital, probably get worked to death, but then you could match into a psych program during your second year.
Well, it's almost like a fifth year of medical school, because from what I've heard, that first year doesn't translate into your intern year. I understand if you do a traditional rotating year or that fifth year of medical school, you got to start from scratch all over again as an intern or as a first year resident.
Oh, really? I've actually met residents who were able to start as PGY2s.
You told me that. I haven't met anybody who actually had
I met, so maybe it's a mixed bag. You know, maybe it really kind of depends where you did your residency and what your mat, what exact program you're matching into. But yeah, I definitely met four that I can at least think of that were able to start as PGY2s. What was really funny, half of those came from like what we're talking about, rotating years, intern years, where you do some random hospital. And two of them came from other specialties, surgery oriented specialties. And it's just, you know, one of our good friends, Macy, is pursuing surgery, and the lifestyle and hours of a surgeon compared to a psychiatrist, I just don't understand why these surgery programs just kill their residents, you know, have them show up so early, work them so late. Like, I can't, you know, surgeons can't perform very well on complete sleep deprivation. It's basically like being drunk. I truly don't understand it.
I don't know, man. My wife is a surgeon, you know. I mean, she's an OB-GYN, which is, you know, significant surgery.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, she gets worked to the bone, but then she thrives in that environment. And so she lives on, you know, 5 hours of sleep when she gets 5 hours of sleep. And she can function. You know, she'll go to bed at, you know, midnight, and she has to wake up at 4:30 in the morning so she can be at the hospital at 5:30 so she can round, so she can have her first, you know, OR, you know, surgery at 7.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then she comes home at, you know, 9:30 or 10. If she comes home at all, half the time she'll stay at the hospital.
Yeah. What advice has your wife given you to handle this weird purgatory space before match week comes?
My wife tells me, you know, just write it out. Just enjoy it. Chew your nails. You're going to be okay. It works out for everyone ultimately. Even if you got to, you know, scramble, or if you got to do the soap because you don't match, ultimately it's going to work out. Even if you have to do a traditional rotating year, the equivalent of that fifth year of medical school, so be it. It's all going to work out eventually. It's a very, very, very small, you know, minute percentage of medical students who it doesn't work out for, who never ultimately match. And you hear those horror stories.
Yeah.
You know, they've been trying for 3-4 years to match and they don't. So, I mean, it happens. But, I mean, as far as, you know, most MD and DO students, it's a very small percentage that actually, you know, actually have to live that horror story. So she tells me to just keep on going, just believe, keep working hard, you know, don't sit on the fence too long, you know, make sure you're making decisions moving forward, but, you know, just believe it's going to work out, because it probably is.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Well, Richard, you definitely seem like you're in a better mind space, because you had to deal with COVID, and you talked about how you almost had like a post-COVID kind of brain fog that you described. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, I went to my second sub-I, when I flew out there, I tested positive for COVID on my first day. And so then I just quarantined. I went to a Days Inn hotel, and I just lived there for 10 days. And I just started taking an online course. I'd get credit for that week, and I kept up with the sub-I, but my sub-I then got pushed down from 4 weeks to 3 weeks. And then I was super excited to start my sub-I. And so after my 10 days, when I got out of quarantine, I began showing up to work. And then I had the worst experience, because I just wasn't performing well at all. And it never occurred to me that I was experiencing any kind of, you know, COVID brain fog, that post brain fog. It never occurred to me until 6 weeks later, when I was in a different rotation. I just thought I was performing terribly, and then I was just doing a really bad job. And I really feel like I was doing a bad job. My oral presentations were terrible. I couldn't organize my thoughts. I remember I had to give a presentation at one point, and I couldn't organize my thoughts, even though I did all the necessary work. I was prepared for it, but I gave one of the worst presentations I ever gave. I was really embarrassed. I was really embarrassed by my performance in general, because I was just doing such a poor job. I want to attribute that to the post-COVID fog. Has to be that. It could not have been me. Had to have been that. So maybe it's just a little tranquilizer for me to say that now. But I did a really bad job there, and that happened to coincide with right after I had been locked away with my...
And how long did it last?
It lasted throughout those 3 weeks, the remainder of that rotation. And thereafter, I went to another sub-I, and felt like I was doing a little bit better. It was still just kind of a, you know, not a wonderful sub-I experience. I felt like I was having a lot of difficulty relating to individuals at both of those programs because I couldn't interject myself. I couldn't get into conversations and get on the same brainwave for whatever reason. And so I almost felt like I was just kind of tucked into a corner, kind of quietly sitting and listening and nodding my head. And instead of speaking, I was just kind of nodding my head a lot. It was very bizarre. So then my sub-I after that second sub-I is where I kind of got on my feet again, and where I realized that, well, I'm actually performing how I anticipate myself and expected myself to perform. So it was bizarre. It was a bizarre experience. I can't say for certain that it was a post-COVID fog, but you know, everything's pointing to that. It kind of makes sense because I've heard the stories of the fog that people experience after COVID. And I know that I experienced.
Yeah. Some sort of like mental change. Fog. Yeah. So, you know, one of my least favorite parts of our school is that we don't have our own like hospital and everyone is so fragmented, you know, during this fourth year. And, you know, you're talking to me from Chicago right now. Good. Thank God for Zoom making our life easy. But, you know, let's imagine that we're in our medical school and people can actually go inside and hang out in a pre-COVID world. You know, a lot of our colleagues, I think, are struggling right now. You know, they have a lot on their mind, really freaking out about if they're going to match, where they're going to match, what specialty they're going to match into. Because, you know, me and you only applied to psych, but there's some people that are applying to multiple different specialties. So they don't really know what they're going to get that day. I guess, what advice would you try to give our classmates and our friends that are in this space with us and struggling right now?
Gosh, I don't know. I'll probably give you the same advice that, you know, my wife gives me, which is pretty much what I told you a minute ago. You know, you just got to keep moving forward, keep trying our best, because ultimately it's probably going to work out for us. I think we should be anticipating not matching and preparing for the SOAP, which is the Supplemental Offer and Acceptance Program, which is that week-long interim where we can actually scramble into other unmatched programs. So I want to actually get a game plan together, and the event that I don't match, that way I can hit the ground running on that Monday, finding out that I don't match, and I'm not just pulling my hair out or moping, wasting the entire day. So regardless of where we're sitting, where we feel we're sitting, I think it'd just be prudent to, you know, actually anticipate that and take proactive steps for that.
I think that's great advice. You know, kind of like, hope for the best, plan for the worst. I posted on our Facebook page kind of that and our story of our friend Alex, who had to go through the SOAP process. And quite frankly, he was a phenomenal student. It kind of, I think, surprised us all that he had to deal with that.
He was amazing. He is an amazing student. He was ranked fourth or sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can have drinks with Alex tomorrow night. He's in Chicago.
Oh, give him a hello for me. And nice. Yeah. And I'll give him an air hug for me as well. No, yeah. Because I mean, that was just so crazy. And I think it is kind of good advice that you're trying to say. It's like, you know, I think we should anticipate that things won't go ideally. And what's your plan to handle that situation? Because I do think, yes, so many people can get lost in their own thoughts and bad emotions. And that keeps them from preparing their personal statement or researching whatever they need to research for this process. You know, I even need to do more homework on exactly what this SOAP process looks like. I know there's a bunch of like videos online I do think like that's kind of wonderful advice for our classmates. You know, what I would kind of say is, I feel like kind of a broken record, but I just think a lot about like emotions aren't meant to be handled dealing with moments that aren't the one we're living in. So you can't think about a past event and really get emotional, or you shouldn't at least. In a future event, you can't really experience that future emotion as well either. Like, oh, I'm not going to match, or I am going to match and I'll feel this way. Or if I don't match, I'll feel this way. It's getting so far ahead of ourselves or thinking so much behind ourselves about past performances. It's not doing ourselves any good. So I think in this weird purgatory space, whatever activity you can do that helps you focus on the only moment at hand, the one we're living in, is the best way to handle this weird time. I know me, I've been cycling a lot more during this time, trying to spend more time with my dogs and with my wife, because during those moments of joy and experiencing that moment for what it is, I don't think about match. I don't think about oh, I wish I'd said this a little differently on this interview, or I wish I had applied or done things a little differently, blah, blah, blah. Because I do think I really have that self cycle of negativity sometimes in my own head, where I just keep wrapping myself around past mistakes or past decisions that I made.
Yeah, I do too.
And that's I think one of my best advice, I think, hopefully for our classmates, because, you know, it really sucks. We can't see any of them right now. We're having a virtual match day, and it's just, it's tough right now.
Yeah, no, it's very isolating. It's very, can be very alone. You know, fortunately we have our spouses. You got Meg, I got New, you know, so we always have them supporting us. And fortunately we also have a lot of friends, you know, and we're in contact with them, our colleagues. I am, and I know you are also. So that's a great, great benefit. I can't imagine having gone through this significant obstacle of medical school without, you know, having, you know, some emotional support, you know, and friends doing it alongside me. I don't think I would be able to do it without you and my roommates and everyone else, you know, would have been extremely difficult. So yeah, very, very fortunate to, you know, have someone to, you know, walk through this, this bog alongside.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's another piece of good advice too. Like during this weird purgatory, we have to remember that every single one of our classmates is in the same weird space right now. And so maybe now is one of the best times to get on Zoom with a friend you haven't seen in years from medical school and just hang out, because I think, you know, being in this weird place together is sometimes one of the best ways to handle it rather than trying to go at it alone. Because trying to describe what residency batch process is like, what the soap is to people who aren't in this medical school world, is sometimes such a burden. And it's I think it's just really hard for people to understand exactly what our experience is right now. So hopefully, you know, I convinced you to reach out to an old friend that maybe you haven't talked to in a while, because you know, thankfully we talk pretty often, but we don't talk nearly as often as I wish, you know. It's tough. Well, I think that's a good place to end it there, Sir Richard.
Well, all right, Logan. Well, I agree.
I didn't realize you liked me that way deal. Because it's one thing to receive McDonald's, but an entirely other thing to know that they woke up early to face the world and bring you McDonald's breakfast still hot in the bag.
Appreciate you.
There's a deal for every morning. Now grab two loaded sausage burritos for only $3. Prices and participation may vary. Single item at regular price. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.